Welcome to Issue 1 of 5-Minute Journal Club, TROP2-directed antibody-drug conjugates in the management of non-small cell lung cancer. This is medical oncologist Dr. Neil Love. I met with Dr. Jacob Sands from the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston to discuss some of the key recent papers and presentations with this treatment strategy, which became very relevant on June 23rd when the FDA issued an accelerated approval of datopotamab deruxtecan in patients with metastatic EGFR mutant non-small cell lung cancer with prior targeted treatment and platinum-based chemotherapy. This follows the January approval of this agent in hormone receptor-positive metastatic breast cancer. The lung cancer approval was based primarily on the results of the Phase 2 TROPION-Lung05 study, which evaluated Dato-DXd in patients with non-small cell lung cancer with actionable mutations, primarily EGFR, with prior targeted treatment and platinum-based chemotherapy. The waterfall plot demonstrated tumor regression in all mutation subtypes, and in patients with EGFR mutations, the response rate was 43%. In the overall population, the median PFS was 5.4 months, and the overall survival was 13.6 months. Oral mucositis and stomatitis were the most common observed toxicities, and I asked Dr. Sands to further expand on these results and his thoughts on the use of Dato-DXd in these patients.
TROPION-Lung05 enrolled patients with tumors with actionable genomic alterations. Now, they had to have gotten platinum-based therapy as well as targeted therapy, so they had to have both of those, plus minus immunotherapy. You know, things like EGFR ALK, ROS1 RET were not as inclined to give immunotherapy in these actionable genomic alterations that are in individuals generally without a smoking history. So these patients generally get targeted therapy and then platinum-based chemo, and then they'd be eligible for enrollment to this study. Now, the study was datopotamab deruxtecan, dosed at 6 mg/kg. And in it, we saw a fairly good waterfall plot. I mean, the majority of patients having some degree of tumor shrinkage. The EGFR cohort in particular had some of the better looking outcomes. Now, it really, EGFR and ALK were kind of big enough subsets to be able to look at those, whereas an array of other actionable genomic alterations were enrolled, but too small to really be able to derive any conclusions from those. And we see responses across all of them.
So, of course, that brings in the issue of second-line therapy in patients with actionable genomic alterations, and maybe we can focus on EGFR since that was the most common alteration in the study. And now second-line therapy is getting pretty complicated because it depends what you get first-line, and now you have three choices there. So can you talk a little bit about how you think through patients who progress after first-line therapy? How does retesting, looking for other developments of mutations factor in? And where do you think data would fit in?
Well, I'm glad you said that, because retesting, I mean, we can't forget that it's important that we retest. I mean, we still want to make sure that there isn't another actionable genomic alteration that we can target. That doesn't typically happen. I mean, it's not the majority of patients, but if that's happening, we need to know that, because, you know, of course, then you want to use that other targeted therapy if it really looks like it's an insufficient number. But you're right. What you choose in the first line has impacts in the second line. What you want to use in the second line has impacts in what you choose in the first line. And this is all in the setting of a field that is rapidly evolving. But here's how I kind of think through it. In the first line, of course, we've had osimertinib as a single agent. We also now have the combination carbo-PAM plus osimertinib, which has demonstrated greater efficacy or greater durability than osimertinib alone. We also have amivantamab and lazertinib that has demonstrated greater efficacy over osimertinib alone. Now, amivantamab and lazertinib, they do have quite a bit more rash, so the toxicity of this regimen is more. And for me, that's an important consideration when talking about something that people could be on for years. Now, that being said, in the second line setting, in patients that have not gotten chemotherapy, to have AMI plus chemo is an important second line consideration.
So if you had data available, in what situations would you use it in a patient with the EGFR mutant metastatic disease?
So if a patient starts out with chemotherapy plus osimertinib at progression, where the data lies currently for Dato-DXd is in patients who had targeted therapy and platinum-based chemotherapy. So if their first line was osimertinib plus chemo at progression, I think Dato-DXd is a consideration. That's a line of therapy that I would strongly consider. If a patient has had osimertinib alone in the first line, then in the second line, you'd really be looking at platinum-based chemo or platinum-based chemo plus amivantamab, which I think is a compelling option in patients that you think can tolerate it. Now, many of these patients are younger, and so they're able to tolerate a bit more. They have a bit more reserve, and that longer-term durability is going to mean more in someone who has fewer comorbidities and longer, you know, otherwise life expectancy. So the ceiling ends up being higher. And so in somebody like that, I think I'd lean more toward the more aggressive regimen. Broadly speaking, of course, you know, this is individual patients we treat individually. There are some older patients that are still fit and active and able to tolerate a bit more as well. And so so that's not to say that I wouldn't, you know, also in older patients, but I'm speaking more broadly. If in the first line someone has gotten AMI-LAS, then I think in the second line you're still looking at chemotherapy probably as that second line, and then potentially Dato-DXd.
Datopotamab deruxtecan is also being studied in patients with non-small cell lung cancer and patients without targetable mutations, particularly in the TROPION-Lung01 study in previously treated non-small cell. The key paper was in the January 20th issue of the JCO, demonstrating a significant improvement in PFS with Dato-DXd versus docetaxel, but the benefit was confined to the non-squamous population, where the hazard rate was 0.63. In contrast, the EVOKE-01 study of sacituzumab govitecan versus docetaxel did not show an improvement in PFS or survival, and I asked Dr. Sands for his thoughts on the contrast in these findings.
This is an interesting comparison because Dato-DXd and sacituzumab govitecan on paper are very similar. They have a TROP2 antibody, they have a topoisomerase inhibitor payload, and they have a linker that is described similarly, although there are distinct differences between the linkers. So on paper appear similar. Now, from an efficacy standpoint, we see some important differences in non-small cell lung cancer. Dato-DXd actually looked worse in the squamous population than docetaxel, but showed real efficacy in the non-squamous population. The non-squamous overall population looks better than docetaxel. Sacituzumab govitecan looked that it worked similarly in both squamous and non-squamous. Progression-free survival did not really separate much with sacituzumab govitecan. The toxicity profile of these two drugs, I think, also highlights distinct differences in the technology of them, in that the sacituzumab govitecan toxicity profile looks pretty similar to irinotecan. So it's kind of that more chemo adverse event profile, whereas Dato-DXd has some of the chemo stuff, but not to the same degree. And it has more kind of TROP2-specific toxicity with some of the stomatitis. Now, the deruxtecan payload across all of the different ADCs does also have an element of interstitial lung disease. And thankfully, those are low numbers, and I think that's a complex topic in itself. And so I like this comparison you're making because I think in some ways it highlights the complexity of just the technology of antibody-drug conjugates having these outcomes and drug profiles that appear a bit different. We've had a lot going on in the EGFR space, and this may end up being something that adds to that discussion as well.
In your patients with metastatic non-squamous cancer who don't have actionable genomic alterations, what is your current second-line therapy, And if Dato-DXd were available, how would it fit in, if at all?
The current standard of care in those without actionable genomic alterations, non-squamous non-small cell lung cancer, after having gotten platinum-based therapy and Pembro, typically, whether that's Pembro followed by chemotherapy or the combination. Now, there are some others that may get other kinds of immunotherapy. But broadly speaking, the next line of therapy, current standard of care, would be docetaxel. Now, docetaxel is a drug that I know we all talk about as it being toxic, and it's no one's favorite drug. Now, the compelling thing I thought from the TROPION-Lung01 data is that in the non-squamous non-small cell cohort, we see a statistically significant improvement in progression-free survival. We see a meaningful improvement in median overall survival that does not reach statistical significance. It's about 2.5 months. And for comparison, the REVEL trial of the combination of docetaxel plus ramucirumab showed a 1.5 month improvement in median overall survival, but enrolled about double the population. So more power. Now, the TROPION-Lung01 was not powered to look specifically at overall survival from non-squamous non-small cell lung cancer. So we see a numerical 2.5 month improvement, but confidence interval crosses 1. We see a median duration of response of about 2 months. So all kind of lining up. We see a toxicity profile with fewer dose drug discontinuations, fewer dose reductions. And so overall, I'd say what looks like a better toxicity profile as well. Now, you know, there is a line in which the FDA, in doing their diligence, has to determine whether something is approved in that setting. But if you're asking me which of these drugs I would want if it were me, I think I would still prefer Dato-DXd rather than docetaxel in that setting, given all of these factors, if I had to choose for myself. And so, you know, there really isn't any one of these categories where we can say that docetaxel was actually better than Dato-DXd. Now, you know, again, that there's a difference between regulatory determinations of approval and what we would choose to give. And so I await these determinations. But I think it's compelling.
One of the frequently asked questions about TROP2 ADCs is whether TROP2 expression impacts outcomes. The next data set attempts to answer that question by reporting on a novel TROP2 assay that was evaluated in patients in the TROPION-Lung01 study, comparing Dato-DXd versus docetaxel using a normalized membrane ratio scoring method. TROP2 expression positivity led to prolonged PFS with Dato-DXd, but did not correlate with prognosis. This trend of prolonged PFS was also seen in the non-squamous cell population without actionable genomic alterations. I asked Dr. Sands to elaborate on this interesting assay and what it might mean for clinical decision-making in the future.
This was presented by Dr. Garasino, a novel way of looking at TROP2 expression, and reported out progression-free survival within the TROPION-Lung01 study. And this is an AI-generated score. This is essentially AI can look at these slides in a way that is more detailed than the human eye can appreciate, but looks at TROP2 expression on the cell surface as well as in the cytoplasm. The equation is the membrane score over membrane plus cytoplasm. My hypothesis was that with the higher surface level expression, we're having more of the drug actually binding to those antigens on the cell surface. But it may be that the increased cytoplasm expression is evidence for greater likelihood of internalization. And the internalization of the drug is an important component of the mechanism of action. Now, with this, there is a distinct separation of the curves in improvement of progression-free survival with a positive biomarker score based upon this NMR. Now, this was developed specifically for non-squamous, non-small cell lung cancer without actionable genomic alterations. But we do see higher biomarker positive results in the cohorts that tend to have better outcomes. And so it may be that this is something that actually is relevant even beyond the non-actionable genomic alteration cohort. There's far more study to do. But in the overall curves, progression-free survival curves, we see that in those that are biomarker negative in both the docetaxel and the Dato-DXd arms, that essentially the curves are the same. So this is not a this is not something that is showing prognosis. In the positive biomarker positive result, we see a distinct separation of Dato-DXd versus docetaxel. That's even more so than what we see from the total population. So median progression-free survival of 6.9 months versus 4.1, and a response rate of 33% as compared to 10%. So the biomarker itself looks to be more of a predictor of response, again, is not prognostic in itself, which I think is an important distinction to make. I mentioned biomarker negative for both, but of course, in those that are biomarker positive or biomarker negative in the docetaxel arms, we see those overlap. So it is not prognostic in that sense.
Do you see a day, theoretically, where these types of assays will be factored into clinical decision-making?
Well, I certainly hope so. It would be very helpful to have a biomarker. This is kind of the thing that's most commonly said from the podium when we see results. When results are modest and when results are extraordinary, every time we say, well, it would be helpful if we could better identify all the patients that benefit from this. So I'm hopeful for that. Now, this may be something that is relevant beyond the specific cohort that where it's been being studied and further developed. And I don't want to get ahead of ourselves because I think we still need to see further outcomes within that as well. I mean, within that one cohort in which it's been developed, I'd like to see how that has matured. I'd like to see that in other data sets. We do have the AVANZAR data that will be coming out, and we'll see what the NMR scoring is like within that study. That's the first line study of durvalumab along with Dato-DXd, and there's a randomized trial. So how much the NMR scoring matters in that, I think will be helpful. Ben Levy presented some of the NMR data from TROPION-Lung02. That's the Pembro and Dato-DXd. It's a small study. I mean, there was nothing to conclude from that. But I thought it was encouraging that was, once again, another data set that looks to essentially support NMR. I'm hopeful that AVANZAR will really give us much more of that data.